Friday, September the 11th, began my planning for the whistle-stop trip to the South. I put in calls to the governors of the states that I would travel through and to the senators of those states, most of them. Governor Albertus Harrison of Virginia said that yes, he and Mrs. Harrison would be glad to ride with me on the train through Virginia and would be co-chairman for their state. Later, he called back and said not to announce it until after September the 25th. I put in a lot of the calls simultaneously, and then naturally I answered them as they came in. Tactically, that wasn't quite the right thing to do. I should have called Senator Byrd before I called anyone else. Dealing with him is a matter of instinct. It's not written in the book anywhere, and I think I have the instinct. This time, I didn't use it quite. I reached his two daughter-in-laws, Helen, Mrs. Richard Byrd, and Gretchen, Mrs. Harry Byrd, Jr., before I got to him. Helen sounded eager and interested and said she would phone me back. Gretchen said she thought she would probably have to accompany her husband to an Associated Press meeting in New York, and she would write me back. And when I found the senator, he couldn't have been more jovial and courteous and darling. And then, I mentioned in quite straightforward manner the purpose of my call. An invisible silken curtain fell across his voice, and he said that because of the death of Mrs. Byrd, he and his sons had decided not to participate in any public affairs for 30 days, which is very understandable. And besides, it's not in me to be hurt at Senator Byrd. Senator Robertson regretted he was going antelope hunting in Montana. Lovely place, and I'm sure he'll have fun. Now for North Carolina, Governor and Mrs. Sanford would be delighted to be co-chairman and would ride the train. An immediate call to their successor and somewhat hostile fellow Democrat, Governor nominee and Mrs. Dan Moore, failed to find them in. That's one of the many schisms in the states that I will encounter, and I shall have to pursue them and get them to ride the train also. Both Senator Irvin and Senator Jordan and their wives answered right away, yes indeed, they would be delighted to ride the train with me through North Carolina. And Senator Jordan particularly had several suggestions of people to call, towns to go to, things to do. The most hilarious call probably was to Senator Strom Thurmond. Here too, I quickly gave my reasons for the call, that I recognized fully the many differences that divided him and Lyndon ideologically. I knew they were both Democrats, and I would be proud and happy to have him by my side when I went through the state of South Carolina. Senator Thurmond said he had to make a very basic decision within the next 2 weeks, and though he thanked me very much, he must regret. That sounds interesting, and we'll see. The decision could be either one of several roads, the old road of Dixiecrat, bolting the party in some fashion, or the complete severance of going over to the Republicans. On the other hand, Senator Olin Johnston said, why, yes, indeed, he and Gladys would board the train at the first stop, unless the Senate was in session. Gladys was in the hospital right now, but he felt she'd be well enough to get out and go, and he certainly wanted to say that he had two daughters, who are mighty good, hard-working Democrats, and they ought to be in on it. He is a very courageous man and has shown it time without number. Also in his state, Governor Mrs. Donald Russell will be co-chairman for the state, and Mrs. Donald Russell is, of course, going to take on the difficult job of being co-chairman of the whole journey along with Lindy Boggs, lending a lustrous name and, according to all I hear about her, a good organizing ability. And so here we go marching through Georgia. Not at all to my surprise, the dearest of them all, Dick Russell, said that probably no, he would very likely be traveling, but that he would be glad to let us have, as advance men, one, or if Congress was out, two of the best people from his office, and that the state of Georgia would certainly welcome me courteously and happily. He had advice about where to go. He was interested. I think it very likely that at the last he might even ride the train or come out for us. But his difference with Lyndon on civil rights is that of a man perhaps 10 years older and deeply embedded in the mores of his state. Senator Talmadge said, why, yes, if his schedule permits, he would certainly ride the train with us. Now, that is an elastic and dependable phrase. But he said Betty for sure would ride it all the way with us. I talked to Mrs. Sanders, and she and Governor Sanders are among our strongest friends on the whole route. We'll be glad to be co-chairman for the state, and we'll ride the train. And so into Florida. Here I found Senator Holland deeply engaged in a race of his own with many dates throughout the month. He thought he could be with us at Tallahassee and could not be with us the rest of the trip. George Smathers will travel the whole trip, and Rosemary also. and Governor and Mrs. Farish Bryant were among the most available and interested. They have the difficulty of having an engagement and a house guest, but they thought they could work it out for the whole trip. A call in to Governor nominee and Mrs. Hayden Burns did not find them immediately. And now for Alabama, the state most adamantly against us, and the state to which I have the most bonds. There was no use in calling Governor Wallace, not even for courtesy's sake. I called Senator Lister Hill in the hospital, and he and Henrietta said yes, if you were well enough, they would go with us to the state. Senator Sparkman said yes, indeed he would. He'd be mighty glad to, unless Congress was in session. And if so, Ivo would. And so on into Mississippi. Here, once more, there was no need to call Governor Johnson. A call to Senator Sinnis was rather sad. He said, no, I think I can do more good in a different way. He is up for re-election. He faces a difficult time, I hear. Senator Eastland, I could not reach. He was in Mississippi. And then the last state, Louisiana, into which we are to wind up. I reached Governor McKeithen, father of the attractive Fox McKeithen that Lucy Baines had talked so much about on her ship christening trip. He, too, said no. He felt that he had better not be co-chairman for the state of Louisiana or ride on the train. That he was working for the Democrats, you understand, but that he could accomplish more by doing it in another way. I hung up with the feeling that he faced a formidable and angry populace who was either too cautious or timid to take them on in the outspoken bulldog way of an Olin Johnston, for instance. Russell Long was in Tokyo and would return on Saturday. When I reached Senator Ellender, he replied that yes, indeed, he would be happy to ride with us on the train, getting on in Biloxi, Mississippi, or wherever, and continuing on to New Orleans. These calls occupied 2 or 3 hours, interspersed with conversation about the train with Lindy, Bill Brawley, and Liz. In the afternoon, I worked on the mail, and then at 4:30, the cabinet wives came in for tea in the yellow oval room. Virginia Rusk, Margie McNamara, Mrs. John Granowski, whom I had not known well before, Lee Udall, and Jane Freeman, Jane Wirtz, Ann Celebrezzi, Mrs. Katzenbach, new to me, and then, to represent Muriel Humphrey, her press secretary, a young, attractive girl, Pat Griffith, and from the Democratic National Committee, Margaret Price, Carrie Davis of the Women's Speakers Bureau, and Scooter Miller, volunteer for many endeavors. I welcomed them. Margaret Price talked. Carrie Davis told her some sorts of the invitations that were received. The whole purpose of the meeting was to discuss what we could all do in the campaign for the next 7 weeks, to lay out the type of invitations we were getting from all over the country, and to see who could most effectively and happily fill them. Many of them were invitations to me, to which I must say no, and which would be very nice if we were able to suggest instead that perhaps Jane Freeman or Ann Celebrezzi or some other cabinet wife might be able to attend. The two most politically active and astute are, in my opinion, Jane Freeman and Ann Celebrezzi, both of whom have been making trips to Democratic gatherings for weeks. And Jane Wirtz, very eager, very intelligent, but not wanting to speak. And Margie McNamara, one of the most valuable of all in certain places, for instance, Texas, and I should think parts of Michigan, ardently enthusiastic. I do not know to what degree she should be restrained because of her husband's job, but I certainly hope the right kind of appearances will be worked out for her. It totaled a lot of conversation and not much achievement, I expect. It got us together, laid out some of the problems, helped us all feel we share them and are needed in them. Later, there was more telephoning and signing of mail. And then finally, at long last, I got to my house guests, Bob and Helen Jackson. It had been Lyndon's idea to invite them up for the weekend. And it's relaxing and fun to be with old friends, particularly when they are as eager and interested as the Jacksons were. We arrange the usual routine for the next day, visit through the house with the curator or the best guide. We sat out on the Truman balcony in the lingering warmth of a summer evening, just as twilight was cloaking the monument in changing colors. And I said, why don't we invite Bob Jr. up here? They were delighted. At my insistence, they picked up the phone immediately, called him, and he would catch the plane tomorrow. Lyndon had departed hurriedly on a chopper While I was engaged in my talks to all the governors and senators for Florida and Georgia, in fact, that was one of the big stalls in my reaching Florida and Georgia senators. From the Truman balcony,